This is Urban Connections. I'm your host, Donna Morrow Wolf. We have two guests today. In studio with us is Brandon Ellington, Missouri State Representative, Democrat from District 22, the Missouri House of Representatives. And also on the line with us from St. Louis, Missouri, is Denise Lieberman, Senior Attorney and Missouri Voter Protection Advocate with the Advancement Project. And Denise testified last Tuesday, January 27th, in Jefferson City before the Missouri House Elections Committee concerning bills H.R.J. 1 and H.B. 30 that would put forth restrictive ID requirements for voting. And we're also going to be joined momentarily in studio by our co-host, Victoria Chase. But I just want to welcome everybody right now to Urban Connections, Brandon and Denise.
How you doing, Donna?
Good. Thank you so much.
Good. You're welcome, Denise. Welcome. So thank you and welcome to Urban Connections. It's an honor to have you joining us, both of you, to discuss this very, very important issue. Protecting our voters' rights is a critical issue. Then that's what this democratic process, this democracy is supposed to be all about. So I'm going to start with you, Denise. Tell us about your experience down in Jeff City earlier this month and what it was all about. Denise?
Thanks so much.
Sure.
Hi, can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Great. Well, thanks so much for having me, you know, and I'm so glad that we're having this discussion about the right to vote, because it is the core right that protects all of our other rights. And many people in Missouri don't realize that that right is at risk right now in Jefferson City. The bills that were heard by the House Elections Committee last week would strip part of our right to vote out of our Constitution and impose restrictive photo ID requirements that have been shown to make voting harder for hundreds of thousands of Missourians. Disproportionately, folks that don't have IDs or have a hard time or have to overcome barriers to getting them. Mm-hmm. Young voters, our senior citizens, people with disabilities, and disproportionately voters of color. Mm-hmm. And I have to tell you, this is the ninth year we have been in Jefferson City fighting these proposals. And here's what's even more astonishing is the Missouri legislature already passed legislation that would impose this kind of strict voter ID requirement. It was challenged in court, mm-hmm. and the Missouri Supreme Court found that they were unconstitutional, that they violated the right to vote. That's why the legislation is accompanied by a constitutional amendment that would carve out an exception to the right to vote in our Constitution. That is absolutely the wrong direction for Missouri, and lawmakers should be ashamed that they are seeking to take a fundamental right out of our Constitution.
So, Denise, that is outrageous and, you know, downright insulting. And you've gone 9 years straight to put up this defense. It's incredible.
And here's what's even more astonishing is that back when this first started, Missouri was one of the first states to try and put photo ID on the map. Mm-hmm. But in the ensuing 9 years, lots and lots of other states have passed photo ID bills as part of this national strategy that was orchestrated by the American Legislative Exchange Council and other conservative advocates to reap political rewards on their end. But these laws have been challenged in court now, not just in Missouri, but in places all over the country. Our litigation challenging a similar law in Wisconsin is now headed to the United States Supreme Court. We've had these laws struck down in Texas, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania. I'm currently litigating a photo ID law in North Carolina. And the courts are coming down and proving that there is no underlying legitimate government basis for having these kinds of laws, and that they do, in fact, keep eligible voters from being able to cast the ballot. Well, the evidence could not be more clear.
somebody out there just doesn't quit. They're going to keep on trying, as long as they've got breath, it seems. We're joined by Victoria Chase here in studio with us, and I wanted to go to Brandon Ellington, Missouri State Representative from the 22nd District, House of Representatives. And Brandon, what is the source of this movement? You're there in the State House. What is the source? Who is putting these bills forward over and over again?
Well, you see this legislation coming from an organization mostly called ALEC, American Legislative Exchange Council. The ideology behind these type of legislative bills is exactly what she says, to restrict voting. Because we know that it is some voter fraud, but there's no voter fraud at the polls. So the voter fraud that they're talking about will not be addressed by this type of legislation. The only thing that will be addressed by this type of legislation is the denial of people that are eligible to vote today to not vote. And most of these voters that we're talking about are elderly, people with medical issues, people that come from poor communities, people of color. So we see voting ID laws to restrict people's rights to vote. And one of the arguments that you hear is that, well, everybody can get an ID. You need an ID to go to a bank. You need an ID to use a check. You need an ID to get on the plane. But what we fail to realize is that those are privileges. Those are not rights. So we have a constitutionally protected right to vote. And when we pass voter ID laws, we're passing poll taxes, because all the forms of identification that you need to be able to vote with a voter ID is forms of identification that you have to pay for. And then there's other complications too. When we talk about in the state of Missouri, to get your driver's license, you also have to be able to have a couple pieces of mail, bills. You also have to have your birth certificate. So these are extra barriers that we're asking people to jump through for their constitutionally protected right, not their constitutionally protected privilege, but their constitutionally protected rights.
Victoria, you want to weigh in on the discussion here. You were the one who facilitated this discussion, and I want to thank you so much. I also have been remiss because I did not thank you for being here when I was away with our dealing with the loss in our family of my son, Alexander. And also want to thank Sharon Vallo, both of you who stepped up so graciously and so generously and made the show go on in my absence. I had total confidence in you, and I'll, of course, call on you again anytime, I have done today. Well, so thank you.
Well, Donna, you are quite welcome. And again, my condolences are with you and your family, and you're always in my thoughts and prayers, and you know that.
Yeah.
But I wanted to ask Ms. Lieberman, this, like you said, this has been the 9th attempt to restrict these or attempt to put these laws into place. And wouldn't it make more sense, common sense, to think of ways to encourage more people to become part of the political process instead of the reverse?
Well, absolutely. I wish perhaps you were sitting in our legislative body. But you know, the fact, and that's what really underscores that these bills are about political expediency. Because at the end of the day, these are designed to deter people from the polls who don't vote the way that photo ID proponents want them to vote. Like, we know what would happen in this country if we saw a true democracy. And a lot of people who are sitting in office now wouldn't be there. And so this is an orchestrated attempt to rig the system for political gain, and that's just wrong. We should be encouraging robust participation in our democracy, and facilitating the ability of people to participate. Our democracy is better, regardless of what political party you belong to. I believe that our democracy is better if everybody who is eligible to vote has the right to have a say at the table. And that the way that these bills target the groups that are already face the greatest barriers to participation, the groups that already have the least amount of voice, the groups that are already the most invisible and most unheard, is just terrible.
Well, what do you say to the Heritage Foundation, who is a conservative think tank, and in their minds, I mean, there is voter fraud. Because of voter fraud, it has turned some elections, matter of fact, because folks who weren't supposed to vote did, and it turned some of the elections.
Well, I'm not suggesting that the voting process is perfectly clean, because it's not. But in-person voter impersonation, someone showing up at the polls pretending to be someone else, has been proven categorically not to happen on any sort of significant scale. I've been part of litigation challenging photo ID laws in like four different states now, and every single academically peer-reviewed study of this issue has demonstrated that's not really where the problem is. If we're concerned about integrity in the elections, we'd be looking, for example, perhaps at the absentee voting process, where the potential for problems is much greater. But these proposals wouldn't affect voters who cast absentee ballots. And studies show that whites are more likely to use the absentee ballot process, whereas people of color are more likely to prefer to vote at polling places. If we're concerned about the integrity of the voting process, maybe we look at the voter registration process and look at how we can better clean up the voter rolls. But these laws wouldn't address that at all. These laws don't address problematic voter registrations. They don't address problems in the absentee voting process. The only thing that they would address is someone showing up at the polls pretending to be somebody else. And that's really hard to do in Missouri because, guess what? We already require all voters to present identification at the polls. Mm-hmm. And so I'd have to jump through a lot of hoops and commit any number of crimes mm-hmm. to be able to steal your ID, to be able to know that you haven't already cast your ballot, and to know where you're supposed to vote, and to assume that whoever is working the polls at that location doesn't know who you are already and wouldn't recognize me.
And so,
all to be able to affect one vote. People who are looking to rig elections have a lot more efficient ways to do it. In addition, that behavior, if you do it, is a very serious crime in the state of Missouri. You could be fined up to $25,000, go to jail for any number of years. You lose your right to vote for the rest of your life. There's just really not incentive for people to do
that. Yeah, there's no incentive. It's counterintuitive that people would do that because you can't sell that vote. You can't get cash for that vote. You can't do anything with that one vote. I want to take this opportunity, though, to remind everyone that this is our winter 2015 pledge drive here at 90.1 FM KKFI, 100,000 watts of people power that's been on the air for over 25 years. This is real community radio. The volunteers are the programmers and the board of directors, and there's a very small staff, and we need you, as we have for the past 25 years, to support community radio right now. Give us a call with your donation. There are volunteers there to take your call. The number to call is 888-931-0901. I'll say that again, 888-931-0901. Or you can donate online securely at kkfi.org. Sharon Lockhart is in there, host and producer of Every Woman, the program that just ended, which is powerful and brings women's issues and human issues to the fore every Saturday at 3 o'clock p.m. Amy Bell is also in there. I see Jeff Humfell. I see Mike from Heartland Labor Forum. I see Mike Murphy. So folks are standing by to take your call. We all work together here to bring you real information and ideas, music, culture that you're not going to get anyplace else on your radio dial locally or pretty much nationally either. So step up and make a contribution to this very great cause. It's how we are able to bring you what we bring you every day and night here in Kansas City on KKFI. That being said, we appreciate all your support at every level. Brandon, talk about some of the people who cannot vote in the state of Missouri anyway. And is there any movement to include them? Is there any alternatives that are being offered in the legislature to increase the voter bank?
Well, a couple things. Right now, there's no barriers for people to vote. Even if you don't have an ID, because it's not a mandatory that you have an ID, you can sign an affidavit in the state of Missouri and you'll be allowed to vote. So it's really no barriers to people voting, and it's no overt push to get people registered, because what we're failing to realize in this conversation is politics is about who gets what, right? So politics is war without bloodshed, and war is bloody politics. So when we talk about an open democracy, that only benefits people that don't have anything. Mm-hmm. So if you want something, then you have to come to the table. And when we see voter ID laws, we're seeing a educated, strategic plan to make sure everybody cannot have the ability to vote, because, again, it's about who gets what. And this is what politics is about. If you don't have your voice at the table, you're not going to get anything. In a democracy only works when you have your voice heard. If you don't have your voice heard, then you typically living in a dictatorship. Right. Even though we have elections, et cetera, if your person isn't elected, then you're going to be governed by whatever party's in power or whoever's in power. So when we talk about so-called minority communities, or when we talk about underprivileged communities, or when we talk about communities that need the most resources, these are the same communities that fail to show up at the voting polls. Mm-hmm. These are the same communities that fail to organize. Now, I know it's a day-to-day struggle to survive, but sometimes we have to look at the game for what it is, and if we want to win, you got to get off the bench. So when we talk about people not having access, currently it's no barriers for people to have access to vote. It's no barriers for people to organize in their communities and select grassroots candidates from their communities that articulate their concerns and will fight for their issues. Overtly, we see that this doesn't happen because we think the political process or the political paradigm is something that is abstract. But it affects your day-to-day life, whether you're involved or whether you're not involved.
That's true. All righty. We do have a caller. I hope you guys don't mind we take a call right now. Folks want to weigh in. Caller, are you there?
Yeah, I'm just listening.
Yep, you're on the air at 90.1 FM. Please tell us your name and where you're calling from.
Calling from Independent. And just was calling in to ask a question and started listening to what he was saying. He's a very smart gentleman.
Oh, yeah. Brandon's brilliant.
Like he would do really well if he was in labor, because that's what we have to do as a labor force. We have to organize, and organizing and being organized when you organize is a great way to get out that vote that you need. And he's just a very strong gentleman. I just wanted to comment that I was very impressed.
Okay, thank you so much for calling and weighing in on the conversation. Thanks. The number to dial with your comments or question is 816-931-5534. That's 816-931-KKFI. However, I challenge you to dial another number. First, and that is our pledge line. It's the Winter 2015 Fund Drive. This community radio station functions mainly off of donations from our listeners, from our community. So this is a grassroots effort, a not-for-profit 501c3 corporation, Missouri Corporation, Mid-Coast Radio Project, Inc., and we need your support to survive and continue doing what we do. So before you call in to ask a question, call into the pledge line at 888-931-0901. That's 888-931-0901, or online securely. You may donate at kkfi.org. I was specifically asking you, Brandon, I was trying to bring out the issue of people who were incarcerated, for example, who have lost their right to vote. And I want to ask Denise also if you are doing any work, or if the Advancement Project is doing any work towards reforming this barrier to citizenship that happens to people who are incarcerated. And tell us a little bit more about the Advancement Project.
Sure. Denise? Thanks so much for asking about that. And I think you've raised a really important point. about people, as we're talking about people who are sort of voiceless in our society. The Advancement Project is a national racial justice organization that works to make voting more accessible for people.
Can you hear us still?
Yeah, I'm getting a lot of feedback.
I just opened up another line. Is that any better?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, go ahead. I think we're hearing feedback from... Do you have your radio or your computer on?
No, I don't.
Okay, well, I don't know where that's coming from.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So we're a racial justice organization. We work to
just keep going.
Barriers to participation in democracy and increase access. And one area that folks don't talk about that much is the rights of people who are incarcerated. In Missouri, if you have been convicted of a felony and you're in prison, you lose your right to vote during that time period that you're in prison, as well as after you get out of prison if you're still on probation or parole. But what many people don't realize is that after that period is over, you are allowed to register and vote. And these laws vary state by state around the country. There are some states that prohibit people who've ever had a felony conviction from ever being able to vote. And here in Missouri, if you've had a felony conviction, you are forever barred from serving on a jury, for example, leading to kind of skewed jury pools. And a lot of people don't realize that even after you've gotten out of prison, you may still be barred from voting if you're on some sort of state supervision. And these laws really hinder the ability of people to rehabilitate, if that's our goal with our criminal justice system. Studies show that voting actually reduces recidivism. Voting makes it less likely that someone's going to commit another crime because they're engaged in their community. It provides an opportunity for people to feel ownership about their community around them. And unsurprisingly, due to the significant racial biases in the criminal justice system, what you see because of these laws is a system that significantly, disproportionately disenfranchises people of color.
Brandon, you want to weigh in on that?
Yeah, no, I would say I agree with her with the sentiment that people that are engaged, because when you engage, obviously you engage in your community. But one of the excuses is when we talk about people that are incarcerated, they're wards of the state. So it's a lot of rights that people lose when they're incarcerated. Now, I work on a lot of issues when it deals to DOC, Department of Corrections, same with probation and parole. Once people are off parole, then they have the right to vote in the state of Missouri. So,
is that generally known even by the people who are, you know, incarcerated and then get out? Do they tell you, well, now you can vote again?
Well, that's one of the issues I have with DOC. Is certain documents that DOC is supposed to make available to people once they're released, such as IDs or accessibility IDs, birth certificates, et cetera. Same when we talk about some of our recidivism programs. They should have more of an educational component to them than what they do. But once somebody is off of probation and parole, they have the right to vote. Now, it is some systemic barriers that is there, that exists when we talk about employment, housing, the ability to really assimilate into society and not be burdened by whatever you did for the rest of your life. And those are some issues that we definitely have to clean up and we definitely have to address. But it goes back to the communities. When we look at the Department of Corrections numbers, the average inmate that gets released in Missouri is either going to go to the east side of Kansas City or the east side of St. Louis. My district is in the east side of Kansas City and in a little bit of Independence, Missouri. So when I look at the population over there and the lack of political activity or civic engagement, then we have a drastic imbalance. Now, on the front end, when she was talking about some of the criminal justice laws, yes, we have to address those. When we talk about imbiasedness in sentencing, because we have drastic imbiasedness in sentencing, the time frame that people get. The same when we look at the makeup of corrections in the state of Missouri, because the makeup in corrections of Missouri definitely does not reflect the demographics in the state of Missouri. I believe it's like 77-78% so-called minorities that's in corrections, when we like 11.5-12% of the Missouri population. So the numbers does not add up. So when we talk about systemic barriers and issues when it comes to corrections, yes, it's a definite problem. Same when we talk about systematic isolation and systematic barriers, it's definitely an issue. When we talk about the accessibility to vote, that's something that people gain once they get out. And another thing that we have to understand is the allocation of funds when people are locked up. Because if you take somebody from the east side of Kansas City and you put them in Boonville, and then they're for 10 years, or they just happen to be in there where the census comes out, that dollars does not track mm-hmm. them back to Kansas City. It remains in the facility or the area that wow. they're locked up in.
I didn't realize that. We do have another caller. Caller, are you there?
Yeah, Brother Ron, just checking in.
Yes, Brother Ron, you're on the air.
All power to the people.
Yep.
And all praise to my good brother, Brandon Ellison.
Yep.
He's a super statesman, and I appreciate everything he does. The question I want to put on the table is, after the results of the last election, we could see that the oligarchy and the money of the super rich are giving us results that we never thought we would have had. Because if you look at the results, we see that the House and the Senate is now controlled by Republicans. And if we forget, they're the ones who shut down the government. They're the ones who crossed great hardship with obstruction. But they still won. Now, elections only decides who's going to have the power. That's all the election. It doesn't have nothing to do with what's right mm-hmm. or what's wrong. And this new thing they got, and I wanted to ask our brother there, is this new data mining, meaning that they can know how I'm going to vote, when I'm going to vote, and they can get specifically to my vote while shutting out other people. It's a new science, mm-hmm. The science of polling. And they're getting results from low voter turnout. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Can you believe that? Low voter turnout is killing us.
Okay.
And we don't seem to get it. So I'd like your interpretation on that, Mr. Brandon Ellington. And much love and one love, and I'll talk to you soon.
All righty. Thanks, Brother Ron.
No, thank you, Brother Ron. What we're talking about is the order war. And the Republican Party has been extremely good at using stratagem and understanding the order war. When we look at voting trends, we know the so-called minority communities is only going to vote in presidential years. We know that underprivileged communities is going to vote in significantly no numbers. So what we've seen from the Republican regime is a targeted attack on middle-income communities, rural areas, and economically prosperous communities. And from the Democrats, and I say the Democrats because they largely represent underprivileged communities, we've seen a very, very feeble attempt at utilizing strategy in the order war. So when we talk about the imbalance of power, it's scary at the state when we have 118 Republicans in the House and 24, 25 Republicans in the Senate. They don't need a Democrat vote for anything. Mm-hmm. It takes 82 votes to get something passed in the House. So in order for the Democrats to be relevant, at least 34 or 40 of them have to vote against it before our votes even count. Mm-hmm. And it's the same in the Senate. Because they have enough votes to pass anything. Now, when we talk about the right to vote, the access to vote, and utilizing our power, money is a huge negative when we talk about campaigning. However, like the gentleman stated with labor, once we organize ourselves, then we can combat money because we have more people that are in the same social economic tub, to say the least, mm-hmm. than we do that people are economic prosperous. Okay. And that's one thing that we have not united. Even George Wallace said it, and he said it better than I ever could say it. If the poor whites and the poor blacks got together, their political capital will be unstoppable. Mm-hmm. But we still isolate ourselves in certain colonies and cul-de-sacs, and we haven't understand the power that we have when we actually got engaged in the political process. And you will see an extremely, totally different political process if more people that was not economically prosperous got involved. More people that was not economically prosperous actually started organizing and lobbying and coming up to the Capitol and coming down to City Hall. You will see a quick turnaround because what we see is lobbyists. We see CEOs. We see people that have access to a lot of money. And then you have a lot of money going into people's campaigns. But the voter numbers is low. Mm-hmm. It's more people. The same with, and this is the last thing I'll say, the same when we look at statewide. Statewide, Democrats hold almost every statewide office, but we don't hold House seats and we don't hold Senate seats because of our game plan and our strategy.
Okay. Denise, were you going to say something?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I just have to echo what Representative Ellington just said. And it's there's actually a name for what he's talking about when you talk about having all these communities that are affected by the policies of the elites, working class and low-income whites, working with African Americans and other groups, fusion politics. Mm-hmm. And it's something that I work closely with Reverend Barber in North Carolina. He's with the North Carolina NAACP, and he's orchestrated a phenomenal movement in that state that I think we could really pay some attention to here in Missouri. And he's brought together people of all sorts of different racial, ethnic backgrounds who have gotten everyone to realize they have a shared interest in working together. Mm-hmm. And we've seen this before throughout history. In fact, right after the Civil War in the South, mm-hmm. phenomenally, mm-hmm. that 10 years after the Civil War, you saw African Americans getting elected, people mm-hmm. who had been slaves or had family members who had just been slaves, getting elected to public mm-hmm. office mm-hmm. in unprecedented numbers. Mm-hmm. In the 10 years after the Civil War, you had 16 African Americans in the United States Congress. Mm-hmm. By 1964, the year before the Voting Rights Act was passed, there were only three African Americans in Congress. Over 600 African Americans had been elected to state legislative offices in the decade following the Civil War mm-hmm. in the South. Mm-hmm. And it's because mm-hmm. fusion politics happened and people came together and they were able to elect representatives that represented their interests.
Fusion
and
politics.
And of course, all of that then fell apart because of violent retaliation
mm-hmm.
against those voting processes in the South, and there mm-hmm. weren't laws on the books to stop that from happening until much later, and it eradicated many of those reforms. Yeah. But the power of that of that coming together that we're seeing happen in North Carolina and other places that are adopting the Moral Monday, the Forward Together movement, I think is something that we should be paying attention to here in Missouri.
All righty, fusion politics, I like it. We're going to have to take a break right now, and please stay on the line, Denise, and continue so we can continue after this break and our discussion of voter registration laws, a push by certain groups of people to impinge on our right to vote in the state of Missouri. On the phone with us from St. Louis is Denise Lieberman, who's senior attorney, deals with voter protection, the Voter Protection Advancement Project for the Advancement Project. Calling on in from St. Louis, and in studio with us is Brandon Ellington, Missouri State Representative from the 22nd District Democrat, and our co-host in studio, Victoria Chase, who facilitated this whole discussion. So we're going to take a break, but please stay tuned to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio, your community radio station. This is our fall 2015, I'm sorry, winter 2015 pledge drive. So while we're on break, pick up your phone and dial the pledge line at 888-931-0901 and make a contribution to the cause of Midcoast Radio Project to keep discussions like this alive on the air here in Kansas City. This is Urban Connections. I'm your host, Donna Wolf. We'll be back after this message.
90.1 FM is supported by Folk Alliance International's Wednesday Night Kickoff Party. Wednesday, February 18th, 10 stages of Kansas City area artists, 8 p.m. to midnight in the Westin at Crown Center, including Nate Allen, Nate Cartwright, Ben Byard, Chris Bruders, Dead Venn, A.J. Gaither, Keith Bahannon, Jeanette Powers, Sherry Woods, Ronaldo Torres, Reach, and Jen Harris. That's Wednesday, February 18th, 8 p.m. to midnight. Folk.org for all the information.
Brother, brother, brother.
the late, great Marvin Gaye, one of America's national anthems, What's Going On. You tuned in 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. This is Urban Connections. I'm your host, Donald Wolf. In studio with us, Representative Brandon Ellington, State of Missouri Democrat, District 22, Victoria Chase, our co-host, facilitator of this program, is in studio with us. And on the phone with us via telephone link is Denise Lieberman, who's senior attorney and Missouri voter protection advocate with the Advancement Project. She testified on January 27th in Jefferson City before the Missouri House Elections Committee concerning eight bills, H.R.J.1, and also HB 30, that would put forth restrictive ID requirements for voting. And our discussion continues. And we have someone who's been holding on the phone for a long time. Please, caller, turn your radio down. I'm hearing feedback as I pot up your line. Are you there? Caller? Okay, we're going to disconnect that. Hold on. Okay, Victoria, you had something you wanted to add to the conversation. Go ahead.
Yes, Representative Ellington brought up something the other night when we were at this awards about Ferguson, Missouri, mm-hmm. and the media's what role the media played during that horrific event last year. And Ms. Lieberman, I want you to join in this conversation as well, because I understand you are the co-chair of the Don't Shoot Coalition there in St. Louis as well. So tell us, Mr. Ellington, what did the media get right and what did the media get wrong covering that event?
Well, it depends on which media you're talking about. If you're talking about the normal media, the mainstream media, it's a lot they got wrong. If you're talking about the media that was produced by the people, it was a lot they got right. Mainstream media showed us all the sensationalized things that was happening. They made sure they highlighted the riots. They made sure they highlighted everything that was negative. When you look at the media that was coming from people's cell phones, tweeters, Facebook, you seen a whole different demographics of what was happening on the ground. You seen people actually trying to block people from from rioting. You seen people cleaning up the streets. You seen people that was peacefully utilizing their constitutional rights to get violated. I went up there several times this summer, and I seen people's rights get stepped on and violated. I seen things that I never should see as an elected official from local authorities and law enforcement. So it depends on which media that you're talking about. And the comment that you're referring to that I made last night, I was actually talking about the unorthodox media, because it's extremely important that we make sure that a true story is getting out there and that we control images that we see.
Okay. Ms. Lieberman, you want to chime in on that?
Sure. I couldn't agree more with what Representative Ellington just said. And, you know, what we're seeing is in the mainstream media is perpetuation of stereotypes, of racist stereotypes that paint people who are demonstrating as thugs, criminals, people to be feared. And it's, I believe, created a chilling effect on people wanting to join the movement. And I think that's exactly the intent. I was just in court representing some of the Ferguson protesters, challenging the police use of tear gas at demonstrations. Mm-hmm. And we secured a restraining order against police indiscriminately using tear gas on protesters. And during that court hearing, you know, you had the judge say, you know, police, you guys are able, there's people that take to the streets all the time, you know, Mardi Gras. St. Louis has the second largest Mardi Gras celebration in the country. People are all out in the streets being crazy, even doing things like turning over cars after football games. And yet, you don't tear gas those people. And then she said, what is it about these demonstrators that's different? And I really feel, you know, we can, especially with the movie Selma being out now, mm-hmm. look at how civil rights protesters were treated right. in the 60s and demonized and as a way to undermine the message that they were trying to get out. That's exactly what I think is happening in the media. That's what I think is happening in the way that it's portraying demonstrators. This is incredible. These protests have been going on for well over 100 days now. Since August 9th, there's something that happens here every day. And there has not been loss of life. There has not been violence. This has been incredibly restrained, organized, and a beautiful expression of democracy. And so I really challenge the mainstream media to reframe that narrative, because it is not accurate. But the great news is technology has allowed all of this alternative media to come up. All these live streamers, they're capturing the real story and the real history.
Absolutely.
And I believe at the end of the day, it's that story that is going to be told in history. But the unfortunate thing right now is you're seeing now police targeting the people who are live streamers.
Right,
oh,
right.
Boy.
They're getting followed. They're getting arrested.
Mm-hmm.
They're getting threatened.
They sure are, because I watch live stream. Yes, I watch live stream all the time throughout the night, you know, when it was really heated down there, and you could just see the live streamers being harassed and arrested. And, you know, thank goodness for social media, because that's where the news is.
That's where the story gets
That's where
told.
The story comes from.
Truth
it comes from
told.
The real the people right there on the ground. So, Ms. Jellington, tell us about the media, you could say, sensationalized Ferguson to the worst extent or what have you. The stereotypes came out forcefully within days, not hours, after the shooting. What can we learn from that event that not only, as I said, citizens and media people, but what can we learn about that, so God forbid something like that happens again, that, you know, you won't have, you know, the cavalry coming in and then you're setting up trucks and it's just the same message or narrative being put out, the stereotypes about something like that?
Well, it's definitely a couple of things that we should immediately recognize and start working together to change. When we talk about media, we typically think of media, something similar to politics. We think about media that is something that's supposed to be open and for the people. Well, each one of these media companies, news, broadcast stations, etc., they own by a larger company. So we have to understand the messaging that larger company wants to portray. And these are the same things that we get via our media. Like some stations, they're partisan. So we're going to get partisan political views on these stations. Some stations have biased messages for the audience that they're targeting. Mm-hmm. So when we talk about controlling the media and utilizing the media to have an open, honest dialogue, then we have to start either disinvesting in certain companies and filter corporations that contribute to that larger corporation or conglomerate. And then we have to also start utilizing our social media networks to make sure we're getting real information out there. The more that we do that, the quicker we will start to see the networks start to shift, because networks is in the business of making money. So if they know that I'm going to watch CNN for 4 hours, because in that 4 hours that they're showing me, they're going to show me everything that feeds into misconceptions or feeds into racial stereotypes and sensationalizes it, well, I'm going to portray that all day long. If they know that I'm only going to watch something that has an educational or realistic benefit to it, then you will see a shift in the network's imagery and what they choose to portray. But it goes back to what people are willing to remove themselves from, or what people are willing to contribute to. Now, if you're talking about, because you said the tanks, if you're talking about politically, what we should learn from this is that you cannot ignore people. A lot of the rioting that happened in Ferguson and a lot of the anger that happened in Ferguson was not isolated to Michael Brown getting shot. It was not isolated to Michael Brown laying in the streets. It was a pouring of outrage that has been building up for years. When I was in Ferguson, I was watching women crying during the protest procession, talking about they are afraid of the cops. Not only today, but they have been afraid of the cops for years in that area. The same when we talk about economic isolation or the lack of top elected officials, the governor would definitely be one that I'm talking about, to come out and talk to the people. And I actually had the same conversation with Governor Nixon, because he asked me, what did I do wrong? Well, the first thing you did wrong was you kept everything isolated. You did not go talk to the people. You could have took this down 20 notches by just going out there talking to folks. The same when we look at some of Ferguson's officials and their history of biased procedures or overt negative comments or biased comments, like when we talk about mm-hmm. McCullough. His press conference actually fueled the fire for the rioting. The same with pushing the press conference back to 8 a.m. at night. Right. I mean, all of this was systematic. Mm-hmm.
Systematic. Wait, well, the phones are ringing off the hook, folks, and I'm taking another call here. But I also wanted to thank one of our donors who is also a member of the KKFI family, Renee Carmack, and Mark Andrews, host of Fool Killer Folk. One of the hosts of Fool Killer Folk brought that message in here to me. So also want to need to thank Mark too, because he's real good. He's real good to me. And I appreciate that. And thank you very much, Renee Carmack. The number to call with your pledge is 888-931-0901. 888-931-0901. Call now or go online at kkfi.org and make your secure donation online, like right now. We appreciate it. Put it to good use every time. And the caller, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yes, you're on the air at 90.1 FM. Please tell us your name and where you're calling from.
John, I'm from the Waldo area.
John from Waldo, thanks for calling in. Your question or comment for our guest, or you just want to weigh in on the discussion?
No, I just had an observation about the our mainstream media.
Okay, go ahead, John.
And their take on demonstrators, their double standard. Mm-hmm. and here, you know, demonstrators are violent and they're, you know, troublemakers. You know, that's generally what you get.
Agitators.
Are you with me?
We hear you.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Now, if you take an official enemy, their take is entirely different. I had Venezuela in mind. They're an official enemy. Because they're redistributing the wealth from the top down.
Yeah.
That's not allowed.
I was hoping you were going to say why they're an official enemy.
Why, yeah.
Okay.
Okay. And they don't want to be part of our empire. They don't want to be a satellite of it. They don't want to be any part of it. Like Cuba.
Yes.
Anyway. But their demonstrators are the wealthy. They're a small group, minority. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could put them in a phone booth, really, you know, if you compare it to the whole population. But they're violent. They kill people. They decapitate people. They stretch wire across the road and, you know, kill people going to work on motorbikes.
Kidnap people.
They kill cops.
Yeah.
They burn down public buildings. But they're the freedom fighters. if you were to believe our media, you know, they're the good guys. Mm-hmm. The guys who are feeding the children and educating them and eliminating poverty, they're the bad guys.
Okay.
But, you know.
Something's twisted, isn't it, John?
Yeah, it sure is. Twisted. Seems that way.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's all I have.
Thanks for calling in, John.
Sure.
816-931-5534. 816-931-KKFI. If you would like to weigh in on our discussion, and it seems like a lot of folks do. So we'll take the next caller. Caller, are you there?
Hey, Donna.
Yes.
Drew and Olathe.
Yes, you're on the air, Drew and Olathe. Go ahead.
Well, just a few comments. In terms of mainstream media, I just basically given up on CNN and MSNBC and the rest of them, because if it doesn't slant to the left like MSNBC will do, and I would say DNC, MSDNC, or Fox's Fox RNC, then there's CNN, and I'm not a fan of them either. I only see two alternatives.
Okay.
In the mainstream, at least, or Al Jazeera, which I've seen America, I feel, has some good journalistic stories that are covered that are ignored. Mm-hmm. And then there's some stuff on satellite, and of course, there's KKFI around our community.
Right.
But other than that, a lot of these, it feels like a complete shutting down of everything. And I do agree with her that the social media is helping provide a voice where it would otherwise be ignored. And I also just wanted to say one quick thing on voter fraud. If you don't believe that this is a way for Republicans to disenfranchise and get people not voting, then you must be deluded. I mean, if someone looks at this impartially from all angles, there's nothing sexy about voter fraud to do it. There's no real money incentive to do it at the booth. The only way I can see that voting fraud is perpetuated is within the voting system, literally the electronic system itself. Mm-hmm. It's like the only reason why you believe in voter fraud is if you're using it as a way to get people who vote Democratic, vote Independent, vote Libertarian, vote Green to get away from the polls because you want to shut them out. You want to shut out free elections. And what's really sad is it just stands to reason. It proves that these people don't believe their own rhetoric. If they really thought that what they were putting out there was true and you know, it was going to stand the test of time and carry the day, as it were, then that alone, they wouldn't need to resort to dirty tricks to get reelected. It just says something about how weak their stance is on everything.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Drew, thank you so much. Yeah. All right. Brandon or Denise, you want to comment on Drew's comment?
I would just like to say he's 100% right.
Yeah. Denise?
Yeah, I mean, you know, and what we're seeing in other states is that even proponents of photo ID laws are now backing off of the claim that these laws do anything to prevent voter fraud. In North Carolina, where I'm also working on defeating the photo ID law there, the lawmakers, I mean, the evidence was so stacked against them that then they changed their mind and said, no, the photo ID law isn't necessary to prevent voter fraud, because we know that doesn't exist. But rather, it's necessary to promote integrity in the election, so to increase voter confidence in the election.
That
argument was used in Wisconsin, too, and the judge shot it down. And the judge said, wait a minute, you guys are the ones that perpetuated this myth of voter fraud. You know, you're the ones that have diminished confidence in the election. In fact, these laws are going to diminish confidence in the election by deterring people from turning out.
So they did the whole flip and spin move on the subject.
Yes, they did.
That's pretty good. Okay, we're running out of time. This hour went by so quickly. Again, I want to encourage everyone to pledge and donate to KKFI, People's Powered Radio. Very unique in this country. We have 100,000 watts of energy pumping these ideas and this information out into the universe. So let's keep that going. Give us a call now with your donation at 888-931-0901 or go online at kkfi.org. And Denise and Brandon, would you both please, in summary, give us the people, the listeners, contact or information so they can learn more about what you're doing and possibly get involved through you. Denise?
Sure, absolutely. Well, folks can get a lot of resources, including fact sheets on photo ID and lots of other issues of voting and issues of racial equality on our website at www.advancementproject.org.
Advancementproject.org. Denise Lieberman, senior attorney with the working on the Missouri Voter Protection Project. She's an advocate for that with the Advancement Project, national organization.
Yeah.
Brandon Ellington,
I also want
go ahead.
To promote the Don't Shoot Coalition
go
for
ahead.
People that would like further information about Ferguson stuff, at least as it's going on locally.
Mm-hmm.
That's don'tshootstl.org.
Don't Shoot STL as in St. Louis?
Yes.
Okay.
That's right.
Don'tshootstl.org. Is that correct? Okay. Brandon Ellington, contact information and tell people how they can get involved as you have made, you know, a call for it, basically.
Yeah, I'm going to give y'all two different contacts. My official contact is brandon.ellington@house.mo.gov. You can sign up for my weekly newsletter. My number up there is 573-751-3129. And unofficially, I'm involved with We the People Political Action Committee. You can contact me there, We the People, KCMO@yahoo.com. It's a nonpartisan political organization, and the reason behind it is to get more people engaged in the political process so we can have a better process.
You even have like
I do weekly political classes. February the 10th, we're actually starting back up our legal classes. It should be at the Mary Kelly Center on Tuesday, 6 to 9. And this year we have the judges, Missouri judges and lawyers is going to actually come out and teach free legal classes.
I like that so much.
That's
and
awesome.
Yes, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. Victoria Chase, our co-host and facilitator of this program, thank you so much once again. Denise, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
All righty, Brandon. And please stay tuned at the top of the hour for Guess Who's Coming to Kansas City with MC Richardson, who honored Brandon Ellington a couple of nights ago. He received a Time Well Spent Award from the United Minority Media Association. So congratulations on that as well, Brandon.
No, thank you.
All right.